We're just seconds away from a conversation with Dr. Eddie Moore Jr. Dr. Moore is a nationally known author and speaker that specializes in race and race relations. He's the author of The Guide for White Women Who Teach Black Boys and Everyday White People Confront Racial and Social Injustice. You do not want to miss this conversation. Dr. Eddie Moore Jr. next here on the Business News Hour. Insight on Business, the News Hour, is made possible through the support of Tarot International. Learning the skills necessary for personal and business growth is made easier when the training involves solid research-based foundations. In your business or personal life, achieve, lead, and outclass with Tarot International. That's TERO.com.
Insight on Business, the News Hour with Michael Libby is made possible through the support of Aureon, Human Resources and More for businesses and nonprofits, AUREON.com, Remax Concepts, real estate professionals with offices in the Des Moines Metro, Nevada, and Cedar Rapids, realestateconcepts.net.
We welcome Dr. Eddie Moore Jr. to our microphones and start out with a very difficult question. Tell us, for those of us who are in the business world, what is it that business doesn't know when it comes to relationships with people of color? What can we learn that Dr. Eddie Moore says you need to pay attention to?
Yeah, and some of it I think is evolving work and research. One, I mean, which most businesses I think are getting some understanding of, is the changing demographics. That America's changing, the world is changing. So who it is we'll be doing business with, we'll be serving, we'll be creating products for, it's just going to be very different. And that's not only going to be across race, but across language, across culture. So it's just a changing landscape in reference to the clientele. Secondly, the issues around diversity are changing. I mean, whether you're committed to equity and equality, the definitions, whether you have someone who's transgendered or gender identity in reference to how they identify, how they apply, the kind of questions you're going to ask on an interview, whether they're going to be in English, whether they're going to be in Spanish, whether they're going to be in Bangladesh, I mean, whatever. So there's just a changing kind of skill set needed in reference to the work associated with diversity. And then I think the most important thing, right at your question, though, is this concept of power and privilege, which is really my area of specialty, that I'm not only helping in challenging workplace to deal with the diversity, but also the issues of power and privilege.
And let's dive into power and privilege for just a moment. We have had several reports on this broadcast about something called white privilege, and we've gotten some blowback about that, indicating that it really doesn't exist necessarily, and you're just downgrading my great-grandfather who came to this country and worked hard and did all the right things. Yet, when we look at pay scales and when we look at remuneration for businesses, we find that African Americans as well as Hispanics are far down the economic ladder as far as earnings than are white people. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, and I think not only in pay scale, you also look at power structure and who is in power in reference to the businesses. You look at the policies in reference to how those policies were shaped in reference to how people not only are paid today, but was paid over time. And so I think that for me, I'm not really interested in the conversation with the most resistant person anymore. I just can't spend my time doing that. I want to speak to people who are saying, okay, Eddie, help me understand how privilege plays out in my life, because I just feel like I've worked for everything I have.
And that is
that question, because it leaves room for growth.
That is
inquiry.
Exactly. And that is one of the things that people say. I have worked hard all my life. I've done whatever this is on my own. How dare you suggest that there is something called privilege in my life?
Yeah, yeah. And then that's where we can look at the facts.
Okay.
I mean, when we live in a country in which, I mean, we had to pass laws. So, I mean, we can even be having this conversation. And so what I'm saying to people is, during those times in which those laws didn't exist, people were working People were buying property. People were going to college. People were, you know, rising up in reference to business, but not all people had access, not only across race, but also across gender and gender identity. And so it's not that you're not working hard, but if you don't acknowledge the fact that for hundreds of years in this great nation, when people were working hard at the same time, at the same job, they weren't getting the same thing. And so we have to be willing to embrace that in addition to acknowledging, yes, you work hard. I'm not denying that. But is it possible because of the history associated with work and workplace that what you receive can be very different? And how can we begin to create a more fair and balanced, equitable society?
And let's turn the page to that. How do we create a more fair and balanced and equitable society? What are those baby steps that Eddie Moore would suggest that we need to take on?
Well, any kind of repair requires acknowledgement. And
first.
So I think that's the first step, is really saying, okay, we have some imbalance here. And so some of that could be in reference to incentive programs. It could be in reference to reparations and not paying individuals, but maybe contributing to community efforts. So some of it can also be in reference to trust for the future. And so saying that, hey, we may have had this history, but we'll never allow this in our workplace again, and preparing in reference to interview, in reference to pay scale, the way that it'll always be in the future through policy or initiatives that are put in place today that will last the next 50 years. And so I think revisiting how we got in this mess as possibly a way to lend us some examples of how we can get out of this mess.
It's an interesting conversation to have with so many people when we talk about something that's been bantered about, Doctor. They talk about America's original sin, and America's original sin being the enslavement of not only the indigenous people to America, but also bringing people here and coming face to face with the reality that that fruit has bore over the generations, if not centuries. It's hard to escape, isn't it?
It is. And we know that with any kind of great pain, I mean, the path to recovery can be just as great. But three key things, I think, is admission, acknowledgement, is apology, reparation, and then love, because there's going to have to be some ongoing work and relationship building to continue to help people to get over that past, because it's a painful past. But I think we've seen evidence of people put forth efforts to do that in reference to the Jewish concentration camps and the way German folks have made some real acknowledgement, made some real reparations, and made a commitment to love and continue to repair and build relationships around that. I think we have models out there. And I think myself, this great nation, that's the great challenge, is that original sin that seems to be buried, not acknowledged.
And even with all of that, in today's political landscape, and we don't do politics on the Business News Hour, but it is seemingly much more distant in today's world with all the rhetoric that we seem to have. Is it just a blowing up of the rhetoric on both the left and the right, and that the people are not listening to each other, or that we're in silos and we're not having the honest conversation between individuals?
Yeah, I think also there's a skill set associated with tough conversations, difficult conversations, problem solving, leadership in tough times. And I think it feels like to me what we're better at is segregation, division, separate corners.
It's easier.
And it could be the easiest route. Again, for me, where I want to spend my time is really with the people who want to do the tough work. And so where I'm trying not to get lost is in the extremes on either side.
Right.
To really say to what I think is a larger clump of people right there in the middle who are ready to grapple, who are ready to push, who are ready to learn, who are ready to love, cry, and try. And I think that's what we need right now, particularly for our young people, to begin to see a time in which we grapple, we cry, and we try to the end, as opposed to segregation.
Yeah. You're an educator by trade.
I am.
And I would suspect that you would believe that the best way to move forward is a solid, substantial education of our young people. But yet, in many parts of our country, education seems to be taking a back seat.
Yeah.
Are you aware?
Yeah, I think it's a combination. Absolutely. You're right that the path to my success has come through education. But what we've known in history is, I mean, many folks in the toughest times in America's history, during that original sin, even, or after, during Jim Crow, I mean, people were pursuing their education, but the opportunities weren't there. And so I think simultaneously, as we keep pursuing and pushing for improvements and access to education, that we push and challenge folks who are in positions to offer opportunities to close those opportunity gaps that people may be facing as well, so that when I do make my commitment to education, that the opportunities are there ahead of me. And so that gets back to that power and privilege piece, that we got work to do on both sides.
Right.
And so that's the approach that I'm taking, not to say who's right, who's wrong, who's at fault, but as you said, how do we go forward?
Yeah. It's an interesting side note for you. I've had several conversations over the past year with individuals who grew up during the Jim Crow era in very segregated communities. And this is what they told me, Eddie, I plotzed, to use a nice Jewish word, about this. The indication was, is in these very segregated communities, Des Moines, Houston, where individuals had African-American-owned banks and lawyers and doctors and hardware stores and clothiers and dentists and educators and schools, and they had an economy within those areas of the community that were segregated.
Yeah.
But today, that may be gone, but so too is try to find a black-owned bank or that. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
And so sometimes the thought is, well, gosh, economically, in our own village, in our own tribe, we were doing better than what all of this other has wrought upon us. Comment?
Well, you talk about tough conversations. Is that conversation of whether segregation was a good thing?
It's a tough thing to talk about.
And particularly when you talk about education as well. But what people talk about, and I agree, it feels like to me integration was a one-way street. That I feel at times that I've made all efforts to reach out to really make a commitment to integration. And I don't feel like at times my white friends and colleagues have been pushed and challenged to do the same. And it feels like that even in 2018, we're seeing these gentrification, white flights, these kind of hyper-segregated initiatives just manifesting themselves right in front of our eyes. And so I think that we have some real tough questions to ask around what was the real result of integration. And was it a two-way street or a one-way street? And as we look at the 21st century and the next 100 years, how is that going to play out? And so I think that as we as folks of color, black folks specifically, look at that, I really challenge my white friends and colleagues to do the same and to really just consider coming halfway, as I think many folks got asked to do so when they had to leave their schools in these segregated. White folks didn't necessarily have to do that. Actually, they created more private schools, more segregation, more housing policies, more banking, red line, so on and so forth.
Yeah. And that is a very seminal interesting and very difficult subject to broach. And I know that many of my white friends, the moment that you start talking about that, they look at you incredulously, because I think you hit something there, Doctor. It maybe has been a one-way street.
Yeah, and I think that's, I mean, to me, in the time I have left on this planet, I want to spend in the mode of love and relationship and crying and trying. That's what I want to do. And so I think that if you're going to be effective creating change and transformation, you got to have the tough conversations.
Dr. Eddie Moore, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much, Doctor, for coming by the Business News Hour to talk about this. Sometimes it's not an easy discussion to have, but it's one of those pieces of information that I think will enrich all of our lives. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Once again, that was Dr. Eddie Moore, Jr. You want to find out more about him, we have links up on our radio blog, so you can find out more about the books he's written and his speaking engagements. Good stuff and some sobering conversation today on the Business News Hour. For all of us associated with the Business News Hour, our producer is Chap Ramsey. The voice of Insight on Business, the News Hour, is Hunter Pease. Sales and marketing falls to Aaron Libby. And the music you're listening to right now is arranged, composed, and conducted exclusively for the Business News Hour by our friend James Goodlett from Jam Good Productions. For all those folks, my name is Michael Libby. Have yourself a wonderful evening. Be safe, be well, be careful most of all. Be good to your fellow man. Good day.